Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Export segment with your leading expert in strategy and leadership. This segment basically is to help you demystify the things that are happening around. How does the pandemic affect your business and what tools do you need? What moves could you adopt to thrive and be sustainable and run a very great export business in this time and in time to come? Stay tuned, and you'll be glad you did. Bye for now. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Sensei's with your leading expert in strategy and leadership. This is the export segment, and it's important this period to discuss exports, to discuss possibilities. I mean, we're talking about businesses that could thrive on a global scale. And with technology, with the adjustments and improvements in value chain, with the pandemic, definitely the way we do business will either be accelerated, changed, or become extinct. So we have with us today an expert. She's the managing director of NYSERD Group. They deal majorly with certifications in concert with Ecocert France. All of this is long grammar, but basically what they do is to help you meet standards that are globally acceptable. We'll be talking with Annabelle Kamuchi. Annabelle, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so you run a group of companies that deal with certification and standards. And with the pandemic, a lot of things are changing. What do you think is the impact of the pandemic on standards?
Thank you very much. It's actually my pleasure to be on this platform this morning, this afternoon. The effect of this pandemic on standards is unimaginable, because for the past 1 month or so, different countries have been making their food safety standards even stricter than it used to be. The European Union have been changing different standards just to ensure that post COVID-19, food products coming from third world countries or coming from importing countries, and even the ones produced in their country, have to now meet a minimum standard. For instance, before the pandemic, I think sometime in January, the European Union changed their food safety standard, improved on their food safety standard, and it's almost like they have domesticated the global GAP standard, because if you are now, if you comply with their standard, it's almost like you're complying with the global GAP standard, which is the global
Good
Practice Standard. And there are some, even the issue of the MRR, the maximum residue level, some of the things that we are allowed for preservation for things like mango and the rest, now is some of them are not even allowed, and some of them that are allowed in very minimal quantity, even up to 0.005 or something. And then that also has now put a lot of work even on the phytosanitary people, that's the quarantine people, because there is a lot of work that needs to be done from the importing country, from the exporting country, just to ensure that they are able to comply with these standards.
Wow. So if you're listening, basically Annabelle is saying standards are changing. Standards are becoming more stringent, even in food. And quarantine is not a new thing. We've always had quarantine. Ministry of Agri has that quarantine department that handles phytosanitary certificates. So if this is the case for Nigeria, that has been positioning or is trying to position for export, to increase export, increase foreign exchange revenue, what do you think would be steps that should be taking, practical steps that could be taken, you know, in view of this standardization that is going on globally?
My suggestion would be, first, for us to now work very hard to have our own local standard for primary production, so that the issue of compliance with standard is not strange to the people in the agricultural sector, because right now it's still strange, it's still novel, it's still something that people think is not possible to be able to adhere to some sort of standards. So the first step is for us to have our own local standard, and then for everybody who is in the agricultural sector to begin to look at having a traceability system. Because whether you are doing conventional production of agricultural products, or you are doing organic, you need some sort of traceability. And I can tell you for free that from now, everybody who would want to buy products from Nigeria will be asking for traceability. They want to be able to trace where the inputs are coming from, where the planting materials are coming from, and all the works, even up to export. So if you are in the agricultural sector and you don't have a traceability system yet, then this is the time to start to think of how to build a traceability system for your organization. That is number two. And then the third one is to start having cluster of farmers who are able to produce a particular kind of product according to a particular standard, that it's easier for from a particular region or a particular state or a particular locality, and they are not afraid of the issue of having different standards or different quality of the same kind of product. That way we are able to enter into the market with volume, we are able to enter into the market with quality, and we are able to enter into the market with products that comply with standards.
Well, from your tone, from everything I'm hearing, it sounds to me like, oh, this is an opportunity, this is an opportunity, this is an opportunity, because you've not for once spoken like, well, this is what is happening, this is what the world is doing, it's so difficult, there's doom and gloom. But you sound so positive, you sound like, oh, we can do this, and if we do it, this will be the impact. So where does that positivity come from, and what is your outlook, basically, generally?
The positivity is coming from the immense opportunities that we can see. Because we have market intelligence, we understand what the international market is, what the international market requires. We have seen the opportunities that Nigeria can, Nigeria can harness, because of, number one, we have arable land, about 57 million hectares of arable land that can be cultivated. We have the manpower to cultivate. We also, again, have not been really hit by this pandemic, this COVID-19 pandemic. I'll give you an instance. We got a newsletter from European Union that there is a shortfall in supply of ginger. So there is a lot of demand for ginger in Europe. And China, that is their great, their highest importers, people who export ginger into Europe, because of the pandemic, are not able to do so. And then the next country who they are hoping to be, other countries that they are hoping to, in within the European Union, that they are hoping to be able to get these supplies from, and also not able to meet it. So if, for instance, we had ginger that complies with even minimum country requirement of 0.02, or that has global GAP certification or organic certification, that would have been a win-win for us. Because what it means is that even if, for instance, there was trade barriers, as people have been saying, is political and all of that, and they cannot find ginger anywhere, and the only ginger they can find is ginger from Nigeria that complies with the standard, they will, will naturally become their natural partner, because we have what they require. and we have what they are looking for. But right now, there is a lot of people coming into Nigeria, asking, not even coming into Nigeria now, you know, placing orders through exporters from Nigeria, asking for ginger. Okay. But again, the ginger does not comply with the standard. So if we have ginger that complies with the standard, what would happen is that we are able to sell our ginger in Europe in 2020. And then in 2021, when others are now beginning to, you know, recover from the pandemic and all of that, we are already in the market. And then when they are now able to come in, say 2022, because ginger again takes 9 months, the gestation period is 9 months, we would have been competing favorably. And because our own ginger has the best potency, people would have seen our ginger for what it really is. So even if there were countries like China that were that have been exporting Nigerian ginger as their own ginger, it would have been clear to the world now that the people who really have this geographical indication for this ginger, for instance, is Nigeria. The same thing with other crops and all of that. This would have been our time to shine. But that doesn't mean that if we start now, you know, we will not be able to make something happen come 2021, because a lot of countries that are still struggling to survive this pandemic will not be able to have products to export or product to sell even within their local market in 2021. So this is the time for us to, you know, it's like one man's misfortune has become another person's fortune. So this is the time for Nigerians to stand up and take hold of the export market and place our name in the export index once we are able to do it right.
Well, if I may, before going over everything you've said, if I may just ask you, well, let me go over what I've heard. I've heard you say that there's room for standardization, and a lot of countries are standardizing, even putting more stringent measures, because it's important to trace where your food is coming from, or whatever item is coming, wherever it's coming from. I've heard you also speak to the fact that an exporter gives you an advantage, because right now people are not able to travel. Travel restrictions is causing, you know, nationals of other countries, making them unable to travel, get some of these items. So the exporter is a person who's in the position to bridge the gap and send items to where they're required. Mm-hmm. I've also heard you say that this brings a lot of opportunity for us, because we have what it takes. If we're to form the groups that are required, do the work, standardize, and actually not just survive, but we can thrive.
Exactly.
So we can be the supplier for the world, taking position now against time to come.
Exactly.
With all this that you've said, can you give us maybe one step, whoever is listening, regardless of what stage of business or export they're in, even if they're an intending exporter, what is the one thing that they can practically do this period to begin to bridge this gap?
So the one step is to begin to think of strategies. Because you have to plan. If you don't plan, you have already planned to fail. So if you are in the primary production, for instance, you are an exporter, you should start to think of, if I'm exporting two products, where is this product coming from? How do I begin to work with clusters in these areas to plant according to the standard that my market requires? Or first, go back to what does my market require? And then, where can I find these clusters to plant according to the standard that my market requires? And then you work from the primary level all the way to export.
Well, Annabelle, that was really instructive. I know that we have a lot more to say, but we try to keep these segments short and sweet. We'll have you on again to talk more about standards, talk more about emerging trends. We'll be glad to have you if you oblige us. And we just want to say thank you so much for
having me.
If we want to contact you, for anybody who's listening and they wanted to contact NYSERT, what would be the best way? Just tell us.
Okay, so you can send a mail to info@nysert.net.
info@nysert.net. That will be info at NYSERT, NYSERT.net. Correct?
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, Annabelle. You have a lovely one and stay safe.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Stay safe and eat right. Thank you.
Folks, that was our time on Senseis. Thank you for letting us into your space. We had some lovely time with Annabelle Kamuji, the MD of NYSERT Group. And there is opportunity. Just open your eyes, think, strategize, and definitely you'd come out tops. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Senseis with your leading expert in strategy and leadership. Today is a great one. We're having Yosola Onanuga on the show. She is an expert when it comes to setting up structure. She's done a lot of work in terms of certification. She has industry knowledge, not just in agriculture, but in value chain management. She works with the Leventis Foundation, but has also had stints in other organizations. Let's not talk so much about what she's been doing, but let's dig into her brain and gain from her experience. Welcome, Yosola.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So how are you holding up this period?
We're doing great. God has been wonderful. You know, it's the time to hold on to God more than ever before.
All right. All right. As always, woman of faith. That's interesting. I just wanted to tickle your brain or pick your brain. I don't know which one would be appropriate.
More people can pick your brain.
Okay. So, penny for your thoughts. We are talking export.
Right.
And a little bit of focus on agriculture at this time. One thing I do know is that the bulk of our agricultural produce is by the smallhold farmer. You know, you have experience with the private sector. I mean, you worked with a certification company. You're also working with the Leventis Foundation, which is giving you another perspective from for-profit to the non-profit angle of things. What do you think the smallhold farmer can do to position themselves in this time for export?
Thank you very much. So one thing I've always heard the MD of NYSERT talk about a lot is, you know, this GeoCorp situation, getting farmers to come together. And I'm mentioning that because I agree with most of what he says when he talks about things like that. For smallholder farmers who are right at the bottom of the supply chain, involved in raw material production, they need to get other actors who are in the value chain involved in their system, so that those people, the other actors that are in the value chain, can either consistently take products from them. Uh-huh. So that other party that they will be working with, who will either be the one funding the production or buying from them and giving them the standard, depending on whatever arrangement they come up with between them and this other person who would be off taking from them, or who would act as an intermediary between them and a final buyer. They must be very clear on what that buyer wants, what the market wants, how to produce according to the standard of the buyer, not just the standard of the buyer, the regulatory requirements of the importing country, the standards of the buyer, and also the standards that surround the particular product that they are producing. Because there are some standards that come about as a result of a particular product. For example, dairy. Beyond complying with the regulatory requirements of the importing country for dairy, dairy in itself as a product, the industry also have additional requirements. So every detail of the way is very possible, but how the smallholder farmer is going to get this information, it has to come from a third party who is acting on their behalf or partnering with them to work together to produce for a certain market.
Okay. So if I hear you, pretty much smallholder farmers should focus on producing, but this time producing for a particular market, which brings issue of intermediaries. We've always had the problem of the middleman. So from the farm gate, it's a particular price, and then the middleman makes a whole lot of
margin.
Where
it used to work, they don't actually like that name very much, middleman. They would rather call them factors, which is quite right. You know, from I learned a lot from, you know, my former boss, and he used to talk a lot about how we need factors who are the commercial, that's the commercial aspect of agriculture that is missing in Nigeria. So factors need to come in. Apart from factors, other players also need to come in.
Okay, so you just said something that I think we should dig into. You're talking about agriculture as a business, and you're implying, or let me not put words in your mouth, but you said these middlemen are not middlemen, they are called factors. So there is a technical term for it. There's actually a career for these people. So these factors, aka middlemen, if you would allow me to say that.
Well, that sounds better. AKA, that's right. Because, okay. I mean, right now, the middlemen, they're actually hurting the system right now. That is why a lot of people don't like, you know, who their person is, you know, right now. But I'm sure by the time they have a better reputation, it'll be okay to call them middlemen.
So how do we get access? How would the smallholder farmer access professional factors in this time?
That's a very tough one. That's a really tough one. And it all comes down to, you know, who's going to be giving, where's the smallholder farmer going to get information from? It comes back to me and you. You know, if you are the one interfacing with the international world and you see an opportunity, which there is, you're asking what kind of product they want, and you are the one that has to go back to where the smallholder farmers are, put them together and say, you know, you have to shortlist. I realize that a big problem that I've noticed in this sector is when it comes to shortlisting farmers, somebody can come and say, oh, I have about 400 farmers, but not all the 400 farmers are capable of producing according to this particular system. So you still have to shortlist. So you are the one who is out there coming back to meet these farmers with information, and you have to work out some sort of arrangement through a production contract or a production agreement on how that's going to work.
So you're saying we need these factors, we need them now, and it is an opportunity in itself. So not just a smallholder farmer producing, but we need people who would stand in the gap, right?
That's right.
As factors,
farmers, they cannot be the one interfacing with the international, except they can if they have learned people among them who have that capacity. Because in other countries, other African countries, you see, you know, companies, cooperatives that are registered in the name of their cooperatives who are exporting directly to international buyers without having, you know, this factor situation, because maybe they have other enabling factors in the system that allows them to do that. Maybe they have investment or they get loans from the government that allows them to do that. So that, you know, that being said, other opportunities include, there are a lot of sourcing companies that would rather come and set up their operation where their supply, where their raw materials are coming from. They would rather come there and set up. When they recognize oh, this is the area that has the advantage in producing a particular product or a particular crop, they come in there, set up the supply chain, put the farmers together, and they have a presence in that community. That is another way. And they're the ones handling the exportation by themselves, moving it from here or from whatever location to their office or to their warehouse.
Okay.
That's another opportunity. There's several ways this can be done, actually.
Okay, so because we're trying to keep it simple, we're trying our best not to use complex terms like CIF, XWorks, DAP, DDP, and all of those big terms. So anyone listening could key in at this time and take the opportunity. So one is, movement is a bit restricted. So it still comes back to, how do we get information out? Who are these people? Who can be a factor, or how can the smallholder farmer access factors or access possible markets in this time? What would you suggest we do? You know, there are a lot of players in the market, in the value chain, the agro value chain especially. How can this work?
Access the current market now. It would be difficult to access the current market right now because you don't even have what they need, but not in the way they want it. So you can work towards projecting for the nearest future, maybe this planting season. I doubt it, but maybe next planting season, yes. But putting the structures in place before that time, of course. How will the smallholder farmers get information? It's difficult. Information needs to, be put across to them, either from whoever is interested in moving those crops. For example, if we're going to approach it from an association level, I will encourage everybody in an association, for example, maybe SheTrades, any of those platforms where there's a group of women who are getting and using the same kind of raw materials. They could, instead of buying from the open market, those kind of people have the capacity to set up, their supply chain using smallholder farmers to produce the raw material that they use. So the responsibility lies with people like that to make sure that they are taking information back to the smallholder farmer, telling them, look, this is what we want. Even if the smallholder farmer gets information on what the market wants and what the market needs, how is he going to go about it without proper guidance from those who are well experienced and who are the ones that are exporting these products or who intend to export these products?
Okay, so if I get you, you're saying that let's write down, look for those who are using the end product locally and get them to form groups that could encourage the smallholder farmer. So I would...
They should work with existing smallholder cooperatives who are already skilled in the production area or production aspect of their products, and then they can now bring in the standard or the requirements or the guidance for them doing it in a certain type of way. That is one channel. I believe there are many other channels getting information to the smallholder farmers, but for the smallholder farmer, how is this information going to turn to money? That is what he's interested in.
So as we're talking about this, I know this is an export segment, but it would sound as though you were somewhat suggesting that we should also look at building out the local market, look at building local capacity first. Is that what you're saying or implying in any way?
For people who are intending to export processed products, for example, a lot of people that are doing herbs and spices and making teas, there's some sort of processing going on at the local level. But these products are intended for a particular market, which are international markets. Those people who are, getting their supply chain set up here, who are getting raw materials and processing here, are the ones that suggestion is meant for.
Okay.
For those who want to export dry products in wholesale, that's a different thing altogether.
Okay. If you were to say to the smallholder farmer, assuming they're listening to you right now, you were to address the value chain and you were told, just like you have 1 minute, just tell us one thing that will help us in this tough time that we're in? What would that be?
How the smallholder farmer can thrive in this tough time. They have to be very specific now when it comes to production. They have to be very target specific. I suggest one, they come together to work together for a particular production, but if the farmer doesn't have a market that he's producing for, how is he going to sell his products? So first of all, identify markets. How they're going to do that is a difficult one. But the opportunities are there. I mean, right now I can see that other countries are going to start looking to Nigeria to source, or you know, Africa as a whole to start sourcing some particular products. It's a tough one. The opportunities are there, but smallholder farmers, I believe, well, I can give an example. I can't answer the question directly to say this is what you should do, but I can give an example. What I'm trying to do in my own way is, you know, ensure that I'm connecting people, exporters and, you know, producers. When I say producers, I mean people who are looking to produce certain finished products. And I'm connecting them to smallholder farmers, because, you know, having that traceability back to the cooperative where you're getting your product from is a prerequisite program. Okay. And it's part of compliance for getting some certain certification. So that is the part I'm playing, and more people need to come into play that kind of role, getting the cooperatives together and connecting them to constant off-takers, whether it's locally or internationally.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
So if I take what you're saying and interpret it the way I'm hearing it, it will be, hey, all hands on deck. Don't think about yourself alone. All hands on deck. Together we can, you know, be stronger. We can do better.
That's right.
As a group, as a cooperative,
right.
And each part playing, right. Each person playing their part. Then we should niche
right.
down. So it's not about producing everything. It's about producing one
right.
thing and doing it well for a specific market.
Right, right.
So smallholder farmers, you know, that would have used their farm to produce
yeah.
rice, beans, onions, everything on the on 1 hectare should focus on maximizing 1 hectare to produce one particular crop that it could have changed.
Market for a certain product, you know.
Mm.
One thing I know is there's going to be a rise in the demand for superfoods, you know, for foods that are more like medicinal foods, foods that heal, because the pharmaceutical systems, when it comes to medicine, you know, it has showed quite a few people during this COVID-19 period. So a lot of people are looking to, you know, culinary medicine. All the hippies that go to Whole Foods and things like that, there's going to be an increase in those kind of people. For superfoods, which is not what we focus on here, you know, these kind of products, there's going to be a higher demand for it. And the more we produce them according to the right standard, getting them into the market, and, you know, the market identifying that these products are coming to Nigeria, that way it helps. Because one thing I also noticed is when people are requesting for products, they're being specific about the country of origin, and they're doing that. You don't see Nigeria there because that's because they are either not aware that we can produce these products in large quantities, or they just don't trust us.
Okay, so that you've just dropped something that I think everyone should pay attention to. You've given us quite a number of nuggets, but this one is also very, very, very key. That there is an opportunity, the trend of things, following trends, there'll be a higher demand for healthy foods, superfoods.
Right.
And we should position for that.
Of course.
To round up, I wish we could go on and on. We don't have much time. We're actually above our time limit for this segment. But to round up, could you mention two or three of these superfoods?
hibiscus. There's been a lot of information going around about hibiscus abderifa.
Okay.
Someone told me that that's what the Chinese use. Everyone's looking for it now like crazy.
Okay.
And, you know, to think that in Jigawa State, hibiscus was not a plant that is cultivated for the purpose of cultivation, farming, harvesting, and selling.
Zobo.
It's used, from what I understand, I'm not sure, never been to Jigawa before, so anyone can correct me. I was told that it's being used as a barrier to separate people's homes from other people's homes, or to create a barrier between their one person's farm to the other person's farm.
Zobo,
so it wasn't
mean?
Being commercially cultivated, right?
Okay. So our zobo, that's the hibiscus, the zobo.
Yes, that's right. The zobo. But the market is increasing now, and We've had some problems with our hibiscus, you know, with the Mexico refusing to buy from hibiscus from us. But that comes back to getting it produced in the right manner and getting the right certification to get the product to the proper markets that need it. We're talking now hibiscus. We're talking moringa as a superfood. We're talking tiger nuts. Even our ginger, you know, it's still very, very, our ginger is magical. We're talking about, I think that's about four, right? You asked for three, so I've given you four.
So ginger, moringa, hibiscus, tiger nuts. Those are four examples of the superfoods.
Right.
Thank you so much, Yosela.
You know, yes, thank you.
Yeah, you were about to say something. Go on.
I was going to say neem as well. Something about neem that, you know, the demand is increasing.
Okay. So everything in our backyard, we should check. If you made your fence with Zogele fans, make sure that you probably have a market for it. All right, Yosela, thank you so much. If we wanted to reach you, if someone in the audience wants to reach you, how can they get across to you?
Y'all want to talk to me? Okay. My number is 080-88-98-0288.
Okay, take that again.
080 88 92 88.
Okay, thank you so much, Yosela. You have a lovely day, and we look forward to having you again. Yeah,
sure. Thank you so much. Take care now. Bye bye.
Bye. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Senseis with your leading expert in strategy and leadership. Oh, it's such an exciting time. Some would say it's a corona time. Some would say it's a stressful time. Studying crisis times, we've been studying many things, and we've seen that every crisis provides an opportunity. And this time is no different. So we have the pleasure of having our own, one of the experts in international trade. He's trained and worked with the likes of International Trade Center Geneva. He's a packaging expert who works with them on that field. He's the executive secretary of an export institute. If I continue to say all the things that he is, we may not be able to conclude in a week. But I'll tell you this, he's interested in growth, he's interested in supporting businesses, especially small businesses, to get into export successfully. Not just talk export, but take advantage of the opportunities that are in there. So you all join me in welcoming Mr. Ufong Udofia. Mr. Udofia, you're welcome.
Thank you so much, Collins. My pleasure being on this program.
You know, we've been trying to get you for a while. Your schedule is tight. Technology has not been as cooperative as it should be. But I am grateful that you have honored us and you're here today. Thank you so much.
That is my pleasure, Collins, because if I had to move forward in this country, export is the way out.
Great. Great. So speaking of export as a way out, you know, we've had a few people talk about factors, we've had a few people talk about standards. I want you to share your perspective. What have you seen this period that is a challenge for exporters? It doesn't matter and whether COVID or no COVID, what have you seen to be the major challenge for potential exports in this country?
Yeah, talking about potential exports in Nigeria, I think our greatest problem is the knowledge of export. People just feel you can just move into the field and start exporting. If you want to be a medical doctor, you go to university and spend 7 years. If you want to be an architect, you go to university and spend some years. If you want to be a lawyer, but people just think you can just dabble into export, which is where we get it wrong. You must be export ready, and the product or services you want to export must be also export ready. So in that dimension, if those two things are not put together, export readiness in terms of the exporter and the product, it becomes a very big problem. What do I mean by being export ready? You should be able to understand the language of export. You should be able to communicate with people internationally. Exporting is not like selling in a local market. The person over there is not ready to teach you export, rather is expecting you to have understood export and then come to him and you do business together. So a lot of people just dabble into it. In spite of all that, the Nigerian Export Promotion Council and other TSISI, like trade and intelligence support institutions, have tried to do and are still doing, people just think, why do I need to go and learn export? Until people are prepared, until we're able to make people look at export as a profession, nobody can just wake up now and say he wants to be a mechanic and start repairing cars. You must spend at least 2 or 3 years. But in export ecosystem, I'm not saying you should go and spend 2 or 3 years. Even if you're in business before, you want to change your business, you need to go and learn, what are the things I need to know? What are the nitty-gritties? What is expected of me? And who am I selling this product to? Does it meet the standard? Does it meet the specification? What is the country entry process of sending my product to that country? So in a nutshell, the gap in knowledge needs to be bridged.
Wow. Wow. So you're saying that as much as there's an opportunity, two things are very critical. The exporter or the potential exporter needs to learn, needs to take time to study, needs to gain knowledge, either directly or maybe I'm adding this one, find somebody who has the expertise to guide and teach them, because you said you don't have to spend 2-3 years, right?
Yes, please.
And the other thing is that they need to get their products export ready. They need to get their So I can't just take my pepper and send it out there. Somebody will buy. I have to get it export ready. Please talk a bit more about this, because you're a packaging and labeling expert. Tell us more about getting products export ready.
Okay. Let's take, for instance, locally. People from the east eat gari. People from the west eat gari. But we have gari Ijebu in the east. In River State, we have the one we call Ogoni gari. We have the one we call Eche gari. We only have Ikwere gari. So it means that if you want to sell this gari to anybody, and you know this person is from the west, he prefers Ijebu gari. If you give him Ogoni gari, you will not have market. So what am I saying? By the time you are learning, you should be able to say, okay, if I am selling my product to Denmark, what standard is Denmark taking? What do they want to take? You should be able to learn. I said, if I'm selling my fish to Denmark, fish, maybe it's going to Denmark, dry fish, because of the standard and benzopyrene, what percentage of benzopyrene is accepted? Even if 5% is accepted in Europe, do all the countries in Europe accept the same 5%? The answer is no. Some countries still have some country-specific standard, that this is European standard, but if I bring it to my country, you must give me in this form and in this manner. So that is what you need to do. Then secondly, to us, in terms of that, if I'm preparing food for you, I should be able to ask you, oh, I want to prepare pandan yam. What soup will you want to go with it? Okay. Because I have some your own taste and flavor, you cannot reject that food. But if after finishing you bring, I'm very sorry, you are using pork to cook this soup, I don't take pork. Definitely, if you were to sell it for me, you will not make money. So I'm bringing this to a layman's knowledge for you to understand that before you do anything and send it to any country, you must know what is acceptable in that country. You must, your buyer must tell you, if you don't do it this way, people in my country will not buy. That is on the product now. Then you as a person must understand Incoterm. Some people will say, how do I pay you? You say, you can wire the money to me. Nobody does that in export. Export is So you must know how you want to be paid. And this must be acceptable to the buyer you are selling to. As I'm talking to you now, Incoterm 2010 is no longer invoked. It's Incoterm 2020. Yeah. How many exporters in Nigeria have seen? How many potential exporters have seen the copy of Incoterm 2020? And what is in stock or what does it have for them? So export is not for you to come in. But in the value chain, you can choose to still be an indirect exporter. You can produce for exporter. You can process for exporters, getting their standard. Everybody must not export. In the export value chain, we have a lot of field. You can be a farmer, but are you farming to meet export standard? You can be a processor. Am I processing to meet export standard? You can be a broker. You don't do anything. Your own is to look for who has it and who wants to buy locally for export. Then you can be a merchant. You gather the product, put it, because nobody wants to go and take one container, one ton. They will not to take up to 20 metric tons. So your own is to aggregate them, get it for the exporter, then finally the exporter. So you see in that value chain now, a lot of job can be created if we really have an in-depth knowledge of exports.
Wow. Wow. You're saying, you're bringing up quite a lot of issues as much as you're pointing us to directions that are interesting. But there's something I really want to, I want you to guide us on. For those who will be listening, how do they, because the more you talk, it sounds like, this is a big task, right? And we don't want to make it a mystery to those who are listening, to anyone who is listening. How can you and your institute support? Well, let me put it this way. How do they get information? And how do they get the right training? You know, what avenues can people use to get, trained, to get information, to upgrade themselves and position themselves to do export right?
Okay.
Just share options available. Yeah.
Yes. Unfortunately, there is no university in Nigeria that is offering export as a course. Unfortunately, for now, I don't know whether they say it, but for now, to the best of my knowledge, I've not seen one for now. But we have institutes, both locally and internationally. Okay. Like what we do, we do training. After training you, we still hold your hand to make sure that, mentor you to make sure that you are able to succeed in export. So we have the master class for people that are already in business who wants to go into export. You come for the master class. And what do we teach you in master class? We first of all teach you, why do you want to export? Why export? By the time you understand, this is why I want to do export, we take you into the standards of what you need to produce if you're exporting. You must know your products. It is not a hard thing if people are willing to learn. I want to deal with cassava. You pick cassava as a product and understand everything about cassava. Which species is being exported? How do I do it? What are the deliveries? What are the products I can get out of cassava? Which one will be easier for me as a beginner? Is it garri I want to do? With that knowledge, even if you're not producing garri, you should be able to go to a garri processing factory and then inform them, this is what I want.
Okay. So there are institutes, your institute, there are other institutes. So maybe point us to in the right direction. For instance, your institute, how will people access your institute and gain, access this masterclass? What do they need to do?
Yes, what you need to do, you can go to our website, www.ioeom-ng.org. You log in, you see where our trainings are. If you want to do it online, you also let us understand where you are, even at this COVID, this pandemic situation. We can arrange online program for you to learn. But it is also very important.
Repeat that website.
www.ioeom-ng.org.
Okay.
So when you log in there, you see materials. You can also become a member of the institute, because I make bold to say that for now, we have other training centers in export, but we are the only people for now, maybe about two more, that answers the name Institute of Export. The one that used to exist in Yaba for now is no longer functioning. There's one that is in Lagos too, that is Institute of Export and Commodity Brokers. So you can get to this. But apart from that, we also have individual people that train on export. People like the Multi-Space Academy, Dr. Bio Ramadu, the 3P Impex, you can still go to them. And individual trainer like Dr. Johnny Semedi, he also have a book. So we are not saying that people must definitely come to us alone. You can try other people. And then make sure that you have this knowledge, because that is what will help us. Even as I'm talking to you now, with the African Continental Free Trade Area, an exporter need to know more. It does not really mean you have to export to America, to Europe. You can trade within African countries and still make your good money.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to have to bring you back specifically to discuss the Continental Free Trade Zone, because and that cannot be taken in 1 or 2 minutes. We will need to dedicate time to it. But so far, if we hear you, we hear that if you want to export, it's possible. If you want to export, this is the time. It is an opportunity. But you have to do it right, and you need to get knowledge. And there are rooms for getting knowledge. We can get that information from your institute. You can go to the Export Promotion Council. There are individuals who are export experts. There's the internet as well. But one has to be knowledgeable, and one has to get themselves ready and get their products ready for export. And that's, in a sense, that's what I've gotten from you so far. Is there anything else you want to add? Because we're running out of time, we try to keep this short and sweet. But is there anything else that you say, if nobody has heard you today, they must know this one thing they should know? What would that be?
One thing they should know about the Institute and about my talk is that export is about passion. Passion will make you to get money. No business is that easy. Just create a passion. Nigeria should export or we perish. Because the oil has failed us, we should export or we perish. In the beginning of the world was trade, and before the world ends, there will be trade.
Oh boy. Doctor, you have not just enlightened us, you have also left us with our brains sparking and thinking of so many things. Thank you for reaching out. In fact, is there any, apart from your website, is there any other way we can reach you with your phone number? If you want to leave that?
Yes, we have the institute number.
Okay.
And I'll also give you my number. The institute number is 090-330-332-8361.
Repeat it again.
090-332-8361.
All right. Thank you. If you're listening, you can reach him on that number. You can also reach the Institute via the internet. More details there. And you can also stay tuned to the next episode of Export on Sensei Zootopia. Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the passion.
All right. That was our time on Sensei. And I will look forward to hosting you again. All of you, stay tuned. Pass the message. Stay safe. Bye for now.